go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome, everyone, to this next episode of Deep Space High, a podcast where we break down the latest and maybe not so greatest of episodes from today's sci-fi TV. I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
And I'm Jedi Master Steve.
What's going on, Steve?
Not much. I was scrolling through the intro web, and I was, trying to find Mandalorian news because we are approaching that season two. We expect a trailer. Hopefully soon, maybe by the time this episode comes out, maybe even shortly after. So hopefully we'll get a trailer soon. We should get the episodes drop in on October. So that's always good to see. But I did
I thought we already got a teaser, didn't we?
Well, we got a teaser, but we should get another. We should get one more trailer and the release date in the sometime around this episode. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we have that to look forward to. And I stumbled across an article while I was looking at that and found that Jon Favreau does not expect any filming delays for Season 3. So we should be looking at Season 3 releasing October, November of 2021 as well. So that's always good news to hear.
Yeah, definitely.
In a world where, you know, movies are getting pushed, TV shows are getting pushed or postponed because, you know, they're not able to get on sets and film. So it's good to hear that it's not going to affect The Mandalorian, especially with their unique filming style. So,
yeah, well, I think they already lucked out with, season two. I think they had better timing of being able to record it. And then, you know, we're so close to a vaccine. I mean, we got, what, two separate vaccines in the final stage. You know, one could be done or ready by October. One could be ready by November if they get approved. So, you know, I think they're anticipating a pretty good flow for their schedule.
Well, not only that, I mean, Mandalorian's unique and it's breaking ground filmmaking wise, because what they do is they film this on a good portion of it's filmed on a soundstage, but you know, instead of using green screens, they kind of have a 270 degree, you know, I won't say semicircle, it's more than a semicircle, but screen around you where they're playing the background. So, you know, the visual effects artist right now could be working on season three and kind of getting the landscape. So like season two finished filming, I want to say it was at the latest January of this year.
Damn, January. I mean, the virus didn't even start until very end December, and it didn't even get to the United States until February or end of January.
Yeah, they were done filming by the time all the lockdowns started happening. Mm-hmm. So, and now, you know, all they had to do was VFX, which they could do from home, and now they're probably working on VFX for that giant screen, that state-of-the-art technology using video game software and engines to help their shooting process. And they said with using this style of filmmaking, you know, it limits the amount of people they have on set to begin with. You don't need quite as many people. So they can follow whatever safety protocols they need in California, but still get it done and not delay the release date for season three. So that's always good to hear.
Yeah, maybe more people will start doing the same thing.
Yeah, especially since we were supposed to get a Star Wars movie, I think, December of 2022. And that already got pushed back because Disney went and moved every movie 1 year back for Star Wars. So let's go ahead and get into today's episode.
You can do it! You can do it all night long!
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, man, let's do it!
I mean, come on, I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it.
I'm gonna go do it.
Chris, what do we have in store on Deep Space High?
Well, we're going to be breaking down the final episode of Mandalorian, episode 8, entitled Redemption.
Yes.
And that was one of the things that we talked about last episode was who exactly is being redeemed.
Yes, and I think I have an idea of who it is, given rewatching the episode and throughout my notes. I think I have an understanding, but we could talk about that towards the end.
Yes, because I also have an idea, and I'm curious if we have the same idea.
We could. Sometimes we tend to think alike, so you never know.
Sometimes, but sometimes we also are complete opposite directions, not even on the same page. So 50-50 with us.
That's very true. Fair. Mm-hmm. This episode kind of starts off it caught me off guard watching this the first time, and it's still a little weird watching it, you know, multiple viewings, that this is how they open up the episode with two scout troopers pulling up in their speed bikes to their checkpoint and just kind of communicating with someone back into town about getting orders from Gideon, because they have the child and they have the asset that he's been wanting for this whole season. It was a very comedic route for an episode 7 that ended on such a serious and kind of, I won't say heartbreaking, but kind of sad note.
Yeah, but I mean, again, think about it this way. You talk about how Disney had episode 7 as kind of like their unofficial part 1 of the finale, but maybe Disney was trying to avoid that to make it, you know, more of a cliffhanger. And I actually like, you know, you mentioned that you don't like it the more you watch it, but I'm actually starting to like it more and more that I watch it from compared to the first time, because one, it is actually kind of funny. They're pretty damn funny. And you know, it's almost like the two stormtroopers are riding their bikes in the middle of nowhere and mom and dad's like fighting, and you know, they're just bored waiting with the kid, and they're trying to shoot the damn can, and you know, they're stormtroopers and neither one of them can hit the damn can, and they're talking like, okay, is he ready yet? And he's like, no, and he just killed somebody for interrupting him, so I think it might take a while. I mean, it's like, it's freaking brilliant. Like I like it. The more and more I watch the scene, the more I like it.
I'm not saying I don't like the scene, because it is funny, and I mean, I do like the scene. It's just, if I was in charge, which there's very good reasons of why I'm not in charge, I think I would have gone a different route. I mean, you ended on a serious cliffhanger and then you open with a ice break kind of comedic scene, which I enjoy, but it's just, I don't think it's the same decision I would have made if I was the EPs, executive producers.
I think I'm kind of glad that you're not the executive producer then. I actually, like I said, I really enjoyed the scene, because, you know, you got the stormtroopers because they're dickheads because they're hitting Baby Yoda.
Yeah, but,
you know, and then they're kind of dicks about it, but they're kind of funny. And then you see IG come in out of nowhere and is like, you need to stop that and give me the baby now. And they're like, nope, try to shoot him. And he just beats the living crap out of him. And you're like, yeah, beat him harder, IG, beat him harder. That's what you get for hitting Baby Yoda.
Yeah, it is a good scene. And IG kind of, he wrecks shop between those two. He breaks one's arm and kind of, throws the other one into the speeder bike and throws him into it so hard and so many times that they bent the front end of that speeder.
I noticed that he, you know, IG broke his arm but didn't touch the blaster. So when he threw him, he didn't kill him. He just pretty much shattered his arm, but he still had another functioning arm. He could have grabbed the blaster, turned around, and started shooting, but granted,
might have passed out due to shock.
Could be, but. I think it might have been the right move to just play dead in that scenario.
Yeah, might have been. You can't beat a droid. It's especially an assassin droid. And another thing I wanted to bring up, talking about this scene, the scout troopers, they holster their weapons on their ankles. They don't have hip holsters. Or at least when they went to shoot the can in the on the dirt, they pulled a holster or pulled their blaster out of the ankle holster.
Yeah, and that kind of makes sense to me. I almost think of them like pilots. You know, pilots' primary weapon is going to be their fighter, and that's why they always have a sidearm. They don't really have – so if they go down, that's their secondary weapon, and I think it's going to be the same thing for these stormtroopers, that they're speeders?
They're like motorcycles. I would imagine you wouldn't keep it on your ankle, maybe your hip.
Right, but they're – that's their primary weapon, and their secondary weapon, the ankle holster, is like a little pistol just in case
he gets separated from it. I didn't see a primary weapon like holster on the hip or anything. So I think that was the only weapon they
have. That's not what I'm saying is their primary weapon. I'm saying the machine that they're riding on, they can shoot. It shoots blasters.
Right.
Out of it. So that's their primary weapon. It's like a helicopter pilot. A helicopter pilot's primary weapon is going to be the helicopter and the weapons on the helicopter. And then they'll also have like a little MP5 just in case they go down and they have to defend themselves. You know what I mean? That's their secondary weapon. And I think that the one that he pulled from his ankle is their secondary weapon.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to the rest of the episode. I mean, we talk a while about this opening scene.
Yeah, we did. But it's a good scene, though. So
it's an interesting scene. And I want to bring up IG-11 comes to the rescue and then makes a questionable decision. I would have thought he would have gone back to the ship to protect Baby Yoda, but instead he goes into town and starts lighting up all the stormtroopers. It was another good scene. It was just a questionable action choice from IG-11.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was, especially going, you know, Baby Yoda was kind of chilling on his chest, almost like a...
Yeah, like one of those baby carriers, but in the front?
Yeah, pretty much. And then, so he's going Baby Yoda first, guns blazing, killing all the stormtroopers. Is that the best way to protect him?
Well, eventually he turns his torso around and puts him in the rear.
Yeah, when they start shooting back.
Yeah. So,
but I thought it was funny because Baby Yoda could see the stormtroopers, so he when they were hitting him.
Oh yeah, so his eyes were lighting up every time one went down.
Oh yeah, he was laughing. He's like, get him, they hit me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just thought that was funny. So.
Yeah, but we also get, well, this episode is action-packed. We do get a lot of information in this episode. We find out more about our characters that are kind of hiding in the cantina right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Moff Gideon is standing out talking and trying to give him ultimatum to give up the asset so he could be on his merry way, and he possibly might not want to kill him if they just hand over the asset, which I think it's bullshit, given that he killed a dozen stormtroopers or so and then one of his officers for interrupting, so...
You know what the interesting part of that whole thing, though, is? If he didn't just kill all of his people, he could have just killed them and had the kid by now, because they already had it in their custody.
Yeah,
His own damn being stubborn, I gotta be badass, I'm the law, cost him actually getting the kid and cost pretty much all of his men.
Well, yeah, because if the communications officer wouldn't be afraid to relay the scout trooper's message that they had the asset and were at the checkpoint, you know, chances are he would have hopped back in the ship, flew over there, picked up the asset, and been on his merry way. Probably have some sort of starship or Star Destroyer in orbit. So chances are, yeah, that his Iron Fist rule kind of screwed him over during this episode, but it comes in handy for our heroes.
Yeah, it does. I mean, maybe that's why they did it in the storyline, so that way they could have a way or method of escape for him.
Yep. Yeah, but like I was mentioning, you find out a lot of information. You find out that not only Moff Gideon knows who everyone in that cantina is, Cara Dune's from Alderaan, and that caught me off guard. I didn't expect her from that, or I didn't expect her to be from that planet. So that was interesting to find out.
But it explains why she hates the imp so much, or the Empire so much.
Oh yeah, you destroy your home planet. I'm sure she's going to be pissed off and seek revenge on every imp that she can find. Also in this scene, we find out who the Mandalorian is. He is he is someone by the name of Din Djarin.
And that's how he knows, Mando knows who the Moff Gideon is, because he is the only person who knows his name. He'd be the last person who knows his name, because wasn't he the one who gave the order to attack his planet?
Yeah, I think he was one of the Moffs in charge, or the Moff in charge of kind of the siege at Mandalore. So once they kind of were able to siege the planet, and he was able to get into the records and kind of get information on who Din Djarin or this Mandalorian is, that's how Mando connects his logic for who he is. And it was interesting because Moff was talking about pretty much a mini gun blaster. And, you know, this thing can tear down just gaggles of troops. And he said, you know, the Rebellion has seen it. The Cara Dune has seen this thing in action. So, I mean, they know how devastating this weapon is.
Members of my escort have completed assembly of an E-Web heavy repeating blaster. If you are unfamiliar with this weapon, I am sure that Republican shock trooper Caracynthia Dune of Alderaan will advise you that she has witnessed many of her ranks vaporized mid-descent, facing the predecessor of this particular model. Or perhaps the decommissioned Mandalorian hunter, Din Djarin, has heard the songs of the Siege of Mandalore, when gunships outfitted with similar ordnance laid waste to fields of Mandalorian recruits in the Night of a Thousand Tears.
Right, and but then she says later that she never saw it really firsthand, but she's heard stuff about it.
But where I was going with it, he also referenced that they used the similar type weapon during the Siege of Mandalore to attack a recruitment center that was training Mandalorians, and it was responsible for, you know, taking out a ton of Mandalorian recruits. So they're desperate to GTFO as soon as possible.
See, now that's what I'm curious about. Why do they want Baby Yoda so bad? Like, they're willing to go through all this just to get Baby Yoda. Like, I get it, he's a Force user, but what about him do they want that they're willing to go through, mow down 12 of their own men, get an entire, what looks like a company killed? Maybe not that many, but maybe it is company. But again, why do they want – what good does this do for them? Are they trying to
– Well, I mean, we hear the client and Dr. Pershing's in episode 3 talk about extracting something from Baby Yoda. So maybe he's chipped with something. Maybe they're trying to get a blood sample to see if they are able to, like, genetically engineer or modify other non-Force users to make them Force users and try to create an Imperial Force-using army to help them overthrow the New Republic. That's where I'm thinking. That's why I'm thinking they want this. So because they said they want him dead or alive, and if, you know, you could extract blood and whatever, maybe tissue samples or whatnot that you need while he's dead, maybe that's what they're trying to figure out, how to replicate it. If it's
could be.
If they're able to replicate it.
Or, you know, dissect them to figure out the way that you use the Force so that way they can get them to be able to use the Force, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Something that's what like I mean. That.
Yeah.
Something like that.
What would be an interesting way to do it is you just take Baby Yoda, raise him, and have him become the new leader of the Empire, and you can mold the new leader, and he can live for hundreds of years. You know? Like, he's already willing to Force choke, so.
He's a 50-year-old now, and then you gotta wait another 50 years until he's a full-fledged, kind of fully trained Force user, because it, you know, in Return of the Jedi, actual Yoda was training Jedi for 800 years. He dies at 900, so somewhere around the age of 100 is when he went into knighthood and started taking his own apprentices.
Yeah.
So that's a 50-year investment. I'm thinking they're going to want to speed it up to and accelerate their plan, so they want to see if they can extract it, put it into existing people, and see if they can get, you know, I won't say masters, but people competent enough in the Force in the next decade.
Well, then what you do is you go to Kamino and then you clone him, and then you use the cloning process like they did with Jango Fett to accelerate his age. But in this case, they wouldn't die in 10 to 15 years. It would be 300 to 400 years for Baby Yoda's case. So it'd be a faster investment.
You could go that route, and maybe they just probably don't have the resources to do that, because it's a very expensive project to have.
Could be, but theoretically, made. I mean, theoretically, they could all still end up being Force users.
Could, yeah, and maybe that's an option that they'll explore or try to explain that's something they want. They want DNA samples, and see if they can create a hybrid.
Yeah. I'm curious why they don't do that more often.
Well, here's a rebuttal I have to that now that I'm thinking about it. The Empire was xenophobic. They, you know, stormtroopers, everyone in their ranks with the exception of Grand Admiral Thrawn that I know of is human. So okay. I don't know if they would want to create a clone Baby Yoda army, because then them being xenophobic, that's kind of like the wrong direction for them.
Could be.
But who knows, with the Emperor dead, they could, you know, loosen their stance on it.
Yeah, you never know.
I think we've tangented enough into the Star Wars universe. We probably need to get back on track with this episode.
Well, I mean, these are interesting theories that were going on, which will have relevance for season two, or could have relevance. So
true, very true.
Or at least useful tangents. So
yeah, they're useful tangents, and we'll have more useful theories coming, obviously, in this episode. Because, I mean, we'll chat about the plot a little bit, but we're gonna tangent off and kind of give theories about what we could see in seasons two and three.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, this is about the time where IG-11 came in and started, you know, causing a distraction. So Mando and Greef Karga go out and start shooting up the place with IG-11. Cara Dune's kind of holding down the fort using her little light machine blaster to mow him down from inside the cantina. And then Mando is, well, kind of blown up by Moff Gideon. He, you know, the only person in the Empire who can shoot right now. So he shoots the power box. Yeah, he shoots the power box to that, you know, mini blaster gun or whatever that the Empire has, and blows him up and causes life-threatening injuries, because Mando knows he's on his way out. He ends up cracking his head and probably bleeding internally.
Yeah. I mean, and it was smart of him knowing that he couldn't get through the Baskar and not to just try and shoot him and hit the box.
Yeah.
That's quick thinking. So.
Yeah, it really was. So, you kind of understand this guy's ruling with an iron fist, but he's intelligent and can think on the fly. He understands that his blaster is not going to get through that armor, so has to improvise.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, he'll be a worthy adversary for season two, that's for sure.
Yeah, but that explosion causes us to see the face of the Mandalorian and, well, Din Djarin for the first time, and possibly the only time in this entire series, because with him not being able to take his helmet off, I don't think there'll be many more instances to see his face.
No, I don't think so. Not unless him and Cara, you know, do the nasty. Because, I mean, it seems like she's kind of into him in this episode.
Yeah, because she seems like she was a little, when he was on his way and kind of trying to get him to go into the sewer to find the covert and other Mandalorians, she seemed like there were some feelings there. I don't, maybe it was just, you know, good friends, probably the only friend she's had in a while having to be on the run, so she probably didn't want to see her only friend go.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that could be one scenario, but you never know.
Or maybe she wants a Mandalorian sausage, we don't know. We'll find out in season two or three.
Seems like a lot of the women do. I mean,
yeah, this is the first one. You had the Twi'lek from episode 7. You had the farmer chick from episode 4. So it seems like...
yeah, which is interesting since none of them can see his face.
I know.
The ugliest guy in the world, and they're still into him.
I know, but it begs the question, why did the show go out and get Pedro Pascal, who's... I mean, I won't say he's A-list actor right now, but he's got to be B+, given he was in Game of Thrones, he's been in the Kingsman 2 movie, he's in the new Wonder Woman movie that was supposed to come out in June that's now delayed until God knows when. So he's a relatively big name actor for to play a character whose face, I mean, in what, 5 hours of screen time in this whole season, you see his face for 5 seconds.
Well, I mean
I think with the idea is
he does the voice work, but he also plays the part really well.
Well, that's the thing. When we see the Mandalorian on screen, the fight scenes aren't him. So, and if I remember this article I read a while back, he only filmed maybe half the season in costume, because they casted him after filming had already started. They were using doubles and stunt choreographers. They were using a stunt shooter who were doing the shooting scenes, a stunt fighter to do the hand-to-hand combat. So how much is Pedro Pascal really under the mask in all the shots we see throughout season one? I mean, I imagine it's right around 50%, if that.
I mean, you would think more, but you never know.
Yeah, you would think more, but it's.
I think the reason why they went with him is because they did want to go with that scene, and the voice does match up pretty well. It's hard to imagine a different voice with, you know, the Mandalorian. Kind of like James Earl Jones, you know, he's
Darth Vader. He's Darth Vader, but he's you know, Darth Vader is only one person, while even in this episode you see two Mandalorians with Din Djarin and the armorer. And then in episode 3, you see multiple Mandalorians, and one of them is voiced by Jon Favreau, who's, you know, Happy Hogan in the MCU and the executive producer of the show.
Okay.
So I'm that's why I'm thinking you could get different voices, because it's not like James Earl Jones, where if you see Darth Vader, it really should be his voice, where, you know, you could have 100,000 different Mandalorians.
I don't know. Maybe they just wanted it for the one scene, pay him for the one scene, pay him to do the voiceover, and just have the actors do it. You could save a lot of money that way and be easy for the actor, and he would get all the credit.
Could be, but so after they make their escape, I mean, they find their way into the sewers. They find where the Mandalorian cauldron was supposed to be and find out that a good portion of them are dead. And they ended up running into the armorer. And this is when two important things happen. They realize that the child is force sensitive, and the armorer is aware of the ancient songs of Mandalorian people fighting these ancient sorcerers who use these powers called the Jedi.
That's what I don't, that's another thing I don't get. Like, I mean, this guy was attacked by super battle droids when he was a kid, and we've seen that from the flashbacks. So if this kid was alive during the Galactic Civil War, you would think that he, you know, the people would at least know of the Jedi, you know, more than ancient stories between Mandalore and, you know, I mean, it wasn't that long ago, and they were in conflict, the Sith and, or the Trade Federation and the Republic. So, I mean, the Galactic Civil War was well known.
Right, but it's like, are you going to know, you know, we fought in the early 2000s, the war in Iraq. Are you going to know all the generals who were in charge and all that fun stuff, just being a normal citizen?
Well, no, but you got to remember that the Jedi were peacekeepers in the galaxy and did serve as generals. So, I mean, you would at least know that there were army generals.
Yeah, but you got to think there, it's a galaxy of hundreds, or, you know, maybe even thousands of planets, talking trillions and trillions of life forms, and a Jedi order that at max maybe had 15,000 Jedi in it.
But who have also all existed for thousands of years.
True, but, you know, maybe if you go find a uncontacted tribe somewhere in the world and expect them to know who the Navy SEALs are they going to? Probably not.
No, but they'll know who Google is. It's literally the most recognized name in the world. Well, you know, it's second? Las Vegas. Just FYI.
Well, you think if it's an uncontacted, they wouldn't know anything outside their own tribe, was the point I was trying to make, or might have very limited knowledge.
That is true, but the counter argument is, how many uncontacted tribes are there left? Well, I mean, after 30,000 years of galaxy exploration, I'm sure that somebody's
The Mandalorians obviously uncontacted, because they know of, you know, the Jedi. You know, they know with the wars with the Jedi and the conflicts of the Jedi, because Mandalorian asks, so he's an enemy sorcerer, and or the armorer wants him to go find a group of enemy sorcerers and whatnot. So they know of them. I mean, maybe Mandalore, the Din Djarin being a foundling and growing, spending his time in the, how did he call them, the fighting corps, you know, they really weren't taught on history. They just taught him how to fight, whereas the armorer obviously is familiar with Mandalorian history.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that makes sense.
But speaking of fighting corps and whatnot, during the flashback scene, we obviously see some super battle droids, which is where Din Djarin kind of gets his disgust for droids, obviously killing his parents, wrecking his village and whatnot. But the bounty hunter, or not the bounty hunters, the Mandalorians that found him, I was watching closely, and if you look on their shoulders, you see a Death Watch emblem on some of their shoulder plates.
Death Watch? Weren't they the ones from the Clone Wars?
Yes, I'm glad. Okay, so you do know something, finally.
Fuck off.
So,
anybody who listens knows that I know a fair amount, but
yes, they are
from the Clone Wars.
So they are from the Clone Wars, and if you're if you're watching that scene in the flashback, it kind of looks like an upside down monster sign. It's like three pillars, but or an upside down W monster sign, whatever. Talking about the energy drink. But yeah, he was founded a part of the Death Watch. So my question is, growing up, was he kind of really close with that clan? Because we know from Clone Wars that the Death Watch was kind of a terrorist group towards the end of the Clone Wars series. But and they had close ties with Darth Maul and the crime syndicates, because Darth Maul kind of became their leader.
Actually, you know what? That would actually make a lot of sense. Because I remember, okay, spoilers, we're going to kind of jump to the end. At the very end, Moff Gideon has the black lightsaber, which Darksaber, which was the lightsaber, I guess Darksaber, used by Death Watch. That Death Watch had it at the end of the Clone Wars. You know, could they have taken it from battling with Death Watch, and that's how Moff knows Mando, or his name, because he had the access in that battle?
Not exactly, because you're missing a piece of Darksaber history. So it started off with Pre Vizsla in Clone Wars, who ends up getting killed by Darth Maul. Spoiler alert, I know you're supposed to say that before, but Darth Maul ends up killing him and taking the Darksaber, and then he has it actually throughout the rest of Clone Wars and into Rebels. So I know you haven't seen Rebels. So there's a character who's a Mandalorian also. What's her name? I can just hear the listeners shouting it at me if they know. Sabine Wren.
They probably don't.
they I don't know. But Sabine Wren ends up stealing it from Maul and then giving it to Bo-Katan, who was another leader. I don't know if it was a faction of Death Watch, because I know Death Watch split sometime in one of the two series, but she gave it to this Mandalorian leader by the name of Bo-Katan, and she was the last person I know of to have it. So when did Moff Gideon run into her or her people and end up taking the Darksaber from her?
I don't know.
That's what I'm looking forward to, is someone to connect those dots, which they kind of have to in season two.
Yeah,
I would think.
I don't know. I guess we'll find out. I mean, we're hoping for a lot for season two. You know,
yeah, we
like, there was only 8 episodes, so I mean, we're asking a lot of questions, and I don't know if there's enough time to answer them all.
Yeah, and then, you know, just to wrap up the plot of this episode, the group ends up escaping. Mando destroys his Moff Gideon's wicked awesome TIE fighter that folds at the wings, and ends up that Cara Dune is going to stay on planet with Greef Karga and maybe work for him, and he's going to try to clean up the, as he says, clerical errors of his chain code. So I think it's going to be a Mando and Baby Yoda kind of off from themselves in the first couple episodes of season two.
Oh yeah, but we're definitely going to see them again for season two.
Oh yeah, yeah, without a doubt we'll see both of those characters again.
Now here's the question, how long into season two, or is it going to be until we see him? You know, 1, 2, 4, 6 episodes in, like how long did they have us wait?
You might see him, if I had to guess, probably episode 3. First one he's on his own, second one something happens where he needs help again and then goes back for their help.
Probably. You don't think it's going to be just to check in and say hi, be a good friend, you know?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds about right. Who would do that?
Right. But, you know, they go on their merry ways, and then that's when we see Moff Gideon with the Darksaber having to cut his way out of the TIE fighter, which on our notes you beg the question of, couldn't he just use the hatch? And the answer is no, because his TIE fighter was upside down, so he had to cut his way out.
Was it upside down? I mean, it looked like there was a hatch there.
Well, if you look on the spherical part, there's two. Like, on the bottom part, there's just a solid, it's kind of solid.
Wait, is
like
the hatch on the top or the bottom then?
The top.
Yeah, I guess that would make sense.
Because when Mando's on it trying to, you know, take down the TIE fighter, you can see that it kind of has some plexiglass or something, so you could see through the top of the hatch. Whereas if you're looking at the scene where he's cutting out with a Darksaber, that hatch on the bottom is just solid metal, so it's obviously upside down, so he has to cut his way out.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
What else happened in this episode? Oh, let's get to the title of the episode in redemption. Let's talk about who's being redeemed. So, Chris, who do you think's being redeemed or getting the redemption in this episode?
I think the person being redeemed is Mando.
Why?
And here's why. Because when you're watching this scene, when you're watching the flashback scene, you're kind of seeing a little bit more of what happens. He's being attacked. His village is being attacked by super battle droids. Ships are flying in from above too. You got the airships coming in, blasting as well. The parents are carrying him, and they're trying to hide him. And they do. They hide him in, I don't know where, storage somewhere.
It's like a little underground, yeah, storage unit or something. Maybe a cellar. Yeah,
so they hide him, and essentially they leave him. They abandon their son, hiding him, hoping that they won't find him, and they were dead wrong, and literally less than a minute later,
they were dead.
Super Battle Droid finds them. And, well, I mean, I don't know if they're dead. They could have gotten away, for all we know.
No, I'm pretty sure they're dead.
I mean, I'm pretty sure, but...
Well, here, hold on.
They're not dead.
Hold on. To think about it, Armorer says you either have to reunite a foundling with his people, or you kind of become its father until he's of age. So I think the Mandalorian who rescued him would have tried to track down his parents, and given that he didn't, was or that he grew up in the Fighting Corps and as a Mandalorian, think that we can assume that his parents are dead.
All right, well, they killed his parents, and his parents abandoned him. So he's probably got some issues. You know, we know he's got the issues with the super battle droids, but then the Mandalorians come to his rescue. You know, they're a savior. That's why he is so fulfilled by the creed. But he hates the droids. We know that. But I feel like he may have some abandonment issues as well. And that's why he has some problems with, you know, leaving the kid. You know, he didn't want to abandon him, leave him to his death like what his parents did to him. So now he feels this sense of possible redemption of, okay, I'm not going to do what my parents did. I'm going to take care of this kid, and I'm going to either reunite him or I'm going to raise him.
Yeah, and I see your point, but I don't think that's who's being redeemed, so to speak.
So who do you think it is then?
So my thoughts are, with the actions of IG-11 and sacrificing himself for the good of, you know, the four of them, essentially, that I think droids have kind of redeemed themselves in the eyes of the Mandalorian. He might not trust them still as much, but I think he'll be more open to work with them and more or less distasteful of him in the future seasons. So I think that action of IG-11 sacrificing himself, killing probably 24 stormtroopers, when it was clear that, because even IG says it, he goes, I can hear it in your voice. You're sad that I have to kill myself to save y'all.
Sadly, there's no scenario where the child is saved in which I survive.
Listen, you're not going anywhere. We need you. Let's just come up
with a... Please tell me the child will be safe in your care. If you do so, I can default to my secondary command.
But you'll be destroyed.
And you will live. And I will have served my purpose.
No. We need you.
There's nothing to be sad about. I've never been alive.
I'm not sad.
Yes, you are. I'm a nurse droid. I've analyzed your voice.
So I think that's where the redemption takes place in Mando's eyes, that droids kind of, they're not all bad, and that they have their uses, given that he grew attached to IG-11 and then had to see him perish. So I think we'll see less hatred towards droids from him in the future. So I think that's why it's titled Redemption.
I agree with the assessment, but I don't know. I think that I kind of like mine better, because I think it's more of the redemption for I don't know, because it makes sense, because that's why they've been building up to constantly with flashbacks throughout the series to finally get the full context at the end to find out, okay, now you are tied to this kid until, you know, either you find his family or you raise him yourself, and now they give him the medal. It's the, now you're a clan of two. He has his own clan. He has his own family. You know, he broke guild code, guild rules by asking questions. Then he went rogue and kidnapped the kid, he feels a sense of
responsibility to it.
Right. I feel like the IG plausibility is the more plausible storyline, but I think it would be a better one with this one.
Okay. Well, we can agree to disagree for now. It might be one of those up to interpretation. You interpret it one way, I interpret it another. So who says either one is wrong? It's our opinion.
Could be.
So, all right. Well, given what we know about season two and that the Mandalorian Din Djarin has to go and find either the child's people and return him, or maybe he's going to be a father figure for the next 55 years until he's a old ass man. What do you think's coming in season two? What would you like to see, or what theories do you have about the upcoming season?
Well, right now, well, if you want to hear all my theories, you should re-listen to all of our episodes just in case to make sure I don't miss any.
Question is there any new theories? Because we have been kind of speculating and wanting answers about certain things, but you know, any theories or just any final thoughts of what could come in the future or what you might want to see in the future?
I'm curious to see the direction that they're going to go with Baby Yoda. They could go a lot of different ways. They could try and find the species in which, you know, Yoda hails from. Maybe they try to find the Jedi. You know, which way are they going to go on that? Because Jedi isn't the same species, but they are force capable. They share that. So I don't know the way that Mando's going to interpret it. So that's one of the things I'm interested to see. And I'm interested to see if they do go with the Jedi route. Is Ahsoka going to be the storyline that they go with, or do they try to find a different Jedi, make something new? You know, there's a couple different things that I'm curious to see, but I recommend you re-listen to all the other episodes just in case to anybody listening.
You don't have to re-listen unless you really want to. We could always use the number boost. I don't care. But yeah. I like it. I think because the armorer said, you know, you have to reunite him with his people. And Mando said, you want me to go track down enemy sorcerers. And so I think it is up for interpretation. It might be the first, you know, the first people he finds. If he finds someone from its species, then he could leave them with them. Or if he finds a force user, he might leave them with them if he's comfortable with the person. But I think I mentioned last episode where Ahsoka was never confirmed and Rosario Dawson was never confirmed as the actress. So I think while we could see Ahsoka, I kind of want to see if Ezra Bridger from the Rebels, this is where you're at a slight disadvantage not seeing that series, but I want to see if they bring him into a live action. And just to kind of give you an idea of who Ezra Bridger is, he was found by a Jedi, a Jedi in hiding from after Order 66 in Episode 3. He was trained at the age of like 15
or
16.
Isn't he from The Force Unleashed?
No.
The video game? You sure? Yes. Or is that somebody else?
Somebody else.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Continue.
So Ezra Bridger was kind of trained and taken under the wing of this other Jedi who was an apprentice during Order 66. And last we see of him in the Rebels series finale, he kind of, I almost said warps, but he goes to hyperspace to a kind of unknown region, or, you know, you don't really know where he goes. You just know he hyperspaced off. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe we could see a live action version of this character. I mean, he would be roughly 10 years older, so he might be in his early 20s, maybe mid-20s, versus Ahsoka, who might be in her mid to late 40s. So, I mean,
yeah. I don't know what the hell I was thinking earlier. The guy from The Force Unleashed, that's a whole I don't know what the hell I was thinking.
Yeah, I don't know.
I was in a completely different direction.
I don't know what you're thinking. Not a clue. But I think I would like to see them. And I know from interviews with Giancarlo Esposito, who plays Moff Gideon, that there's going to be fights with the Darksaber, because he mentions that he breaks several trying to film and rehearse scenes for the upcoming season. So maybe we'll see some lightsaber fights.
Yeah, maybe.
Fingers crossed.
Well, I mean, one of my theories that I had with why Moff Gideon used the lightsaber to cut open was and use that as the last scene. They wanted to still have a lightsaber going off in every Star Wars movie or show that they make. And if they didn't, this would have been the first one that they never done that with. And it was the same with Rogue One, while they had that awesome badass fight scene with Darth Vader. Like, we didn't really need it. Well, who am I kidding? Yeah, we did. That was just fucking awesome. But, you know, they added it just to have that lightsaber scene.
Well, I mean, I'm very curious to see what's going to happen in season two. I am 99.99% sure that when season two comes out, we will do kind of reactions to it, and we'll talk about the episodes live. You know, I think they're going to come out on Friday, so we'll probably record our podcast and the Friday night or the Saturday night, and have it released the following week, and kind of go with it as people are watching this season for the first time.
Yeah.
Hopefully. 99% sure, but there's always a 0.001% chance that doesn't happen.
Yeah, you never know.
All right, so Chris, overall, what did you think of the first season of The Mandalorian?
Oh, A+. I mean, I know we go with the numbers and the stars, but I think A+ is sufficient. You know, it was Baby Yoda. One, Baby Yoda would have made it like A++ alone, but we're just going to put him aside for a second. The acting was great. Choreography was great. The directing was phenomenal. They had such great attention to details. I mean, you could literally hear bones cracking. They went when the armor smashed in the helmet, you could see like how fucked up it was with the face.
Oh yeah, like shattered like it was freaking pottery.
Yeah, I mean, they put a lot of attention to detail and a lot of different stuff and a lot of little stuff that, you know, literally you can be stoned out of your mind nitpicking everything, and they still did a phenomenal job.
Yeah.
So that's how you know you get it, you know, you're good when you could be that high and and can't struggle to pick shit out, you know, pick out them details. So I mean, you got to give them an A+ for The Mandalorian in season one, and I hope season two can be just as good.
Yeah, and I think coming into this season, I know I had very high expectations for the show, given who was in charge with Filoni and Favreau, and I think the show met all my expectations. I was very satisfied with it. I was a little disappointed with the runtime. I was under the impression it was going to be closer to 45 to 55 minutes per episode, and we did get a couple that were right around the 30-minute mark or the 35-minute mark, so I was a little disappointed in that. Hopefully they can have some more.
Yeah, it could have been a little longer.
Hopefully the season two will have a couple longer, or, you know, a longer runtime on average. So other than that, I mean, the bar was, or the expectations were already high, and I think it met my expectations and maybe even exceeded it a little bit. So I'm really hyped for season two. So please don't blow it.
Yeah, I know. Same. I mean, you got me hyped up for The Mandalorian. I was not as hyped up, but then again, you, when it comes to you and overhyping things, like, you have a 50-50 track record, and I specifically like to cite Suicide Squad, because I specifically remember playing pool with you, and you'd be like, there's no way that this movie can be bad. And I'm like, yes, it can. It's a DC movie.
Well,
and it was.
Yeah, Suicide Squad, I mean, I had high expectations for it, and I was unaware of all, at the time, I was unaware of all the mingling that executives were having, and they were clashing with the vision the director had versus what they wanted. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a little
Justice League. But I am looking forward to the.
Well, once Snyder Justice League switched and Snyder had to leave for very understandable personal reasons, and they brought Josh Whedon in, they're two totally different cinematic styles, and I didn't have that high of hopes as soon as I found that out. So,
should we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat him.
Punch it,
punch it,
punch it,
punch it.
Punch it,
Huxley!
Punch
it! Let's get the hell out of here. Let's punch it. But anyways, what do we have in store for next time, now that we're done with The Mandalorian?
All right, now that we knocked out our second series, we are moving on from the Star Trek and Star Wars worlds. We are going to tackle Netflix's original Altered Carbon. Chris hasn't seen it, so I'm interested to get his first take on it. I've been intentionally leaving out details about the series. All I've said, it's a sci-fi kind of cyberpunk series, a dystopian type future show. And I look forward to getting his reaction. It is based off the novel series. I can't think of the author off the top of my head, but it is based off the novels of the same name, Altered Carbon. So look forward to that.
Two responses. One, how many novels are in that series?
How many what?
How many books are in that series?
I think it's two, maybe three.
Maybe I'll read them. Two.
I want you to watch the show before you read the book.
Well, should I watch the show high or sober? That's my second point.
You know,
for the first time watching this.
This is a weird, interesting show with a lot of a very broad color palette. So I would love to get your take on it while you're a little high, and I'll watch it while I'm a little sober. Well,
only a little sober.
You know, I usually have a drink or two while I'm watching these. I don't smoke like you do, so. But I'm curious to get your take, the different takes from it with the point of view. So,
well, that was the original purpose of this show, was you're supposed to do it drunk, I'm supposed to do it high.
No, that was not the original purpose of the show.
Well, that was my original purpose of the show.
That was your original purpose.
I thought that was a good concept, though.
There was Star another Wars concept.
Star Trek, alcohol versus weed, you know.
Well.
The kind of different battles between different sides of the sci-fi spectrum.
No. Well, no, I don't know. No, that wasn't the concept coming in my mind. So we had different point of views when I pitched the show to you.
Yeah.
But yes. So next time on Deep Space High, we're going to check out Altered Carbon. We're going to do a part one and part two for season one. So the next episode will be the first five episodes. And then the episode following will be the last half. And we're going to get away from the episodic breakdown and just kind of talk about the series, the science, and how we like the acting, directing, and our thoughts on the show. So that's next time. Hopefully y'all will check out Altered Carbon on Netflix and then give the show a listen.
I guess that will do it. I think that will do it for this week's episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Deep Space High. Be sure to join us next week as we start talking about Altered Carbon.
Yep. Don't forget to keep the conversation going with hashtag Deep Space High. Also, check out our Facebook page, Deep Space High Sci-Fi TV Reviews, and our Insta at Deep Space High Podcast to stay tuned with the latest announcements, like maybe show changes or whenever we start, you know, finishing up one series and jumping to a new one or a new season. We'll try to give our updates there, and that's where you can stay, well, up to date.
Yeah. And also, if you want to leave a comment or review, let us know what you think. If you love the show or you absolutely hate it, we don't really care, as long as you keep listening, and give us your feedback on Apple Podcasts, or you could also subscribe if you want. I personally would subscribe if I were you. I think we put out some pretty decent content.
Yeah, we put out some pretty decent content, and I actually checked Apple Podcasts before we hit the record button. We had four reactions, all five stars, and then we had two reviews, and they were both positive reviews. So while we don't care, we would really love to see more positive than negative views. So if you got something negative to say, just make it a reasonable critique. That's all we ask.
Yeah. I think that's pretty good. I didn't know we were doing that well on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah.
I didn't know anybody had already commented yet or left any reviews. So that's great news.
Great news.
So, all right. Well, I am Scar Marshal Chris.
And I'm Jedi Master Steve. And may the Force be with you.